Stay tuned for Africa News Tonight, coming up right after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Francis Alonso reporting. U.S. President Barack Obama says global climate change poses immediate risk to the country's national security, increasing the possibility of natural disasters and humanitarian crisis. The president is speaking Wednesday at graduation ceremonies at the U.S. Coast Guard Academy in New London, Connecticut. The White House says Mr. Obama will tell graduates that the effects of climate change will impact how the military defends the U.S. and that the world needs to urgently act to combat the effects of rising temperatures across the globe. Burundi's president, Pierre Nkurunziza, has agreed to delay parliamentary and local elections, Hillary Hewler reports.
Presidential spokesman Willy Nyamitwe says that the delay is at least partly a response to both domestic and international pressure.
Politicians from the opposition have asked the government to delay elections. And the second reason is that head of states from the region and the UN, the AU and EU have urged the government to delay a little elections. And the third reason is that the president got a proposal from the electoral committee.
Nyamitwe says there's been no decision on whether or not to delay presidential elections scheduled to be held June 26th. Hillary Hewler for VOA News, Nairobi.
U.S. intelligence officials have released to the public a large amount of documents recovered during the 2011 raid on al-Qaeda leader Osama bin Laden's compound in Pakistan. American special forces who killed bin Laden gathered documents, computers, and other evidence during the raid. Wednesday's release was the most significant disclosure of the al-Qaeda leader's secrets. This is VOA News. Italian police say they have arrested a Moroccan man suspected of involvement in the March 18th attack on a Tunisian museum that left 22 people dead. This is police speaking to reporters Wednesday, saying that the 22-year-old suspect was arrested in an Italian town near Milan. Anti-terrorism police made the arrest, and more details are expected later today. The Islamic State militant group claimed responsibility for the March 18th attack, in which gunmen opened fire on busloads of foreign tourists outside the museum in Tunis and also opened fire inside the building. A Tunisian policeman was killed, as well as 21 tourists. Iran's Supreme Leader Ayatollah Ali Khamenei said Wednesday that international inspectors will not be given access to the country's scientists or military sites under any nuclear deal with world powers. Negotiators have been working on details of a final agreement to scale back Iran's nuclear program in exchange for sanctions relief. Pyongyang has canceled United Nations Secretary General Ban Ki-moon's planned visit there. VOA's Bryden Patton has details.
After planning a visit to the Kaesong Industrial Complex located just across the border in North Korea for over a week, United Nations Secretary General Ban Ki-moon was surprised by Pyongyang's sudden cancellation.
The authorities of the Democratic People's Republic of Korea informed us through their diplomatic channel that they were reversing their decision for me to visit the Kaesong Industrial Complex. No explanation was given.
The Kaesong Industrial Complex is one of the few remaining remnants of South Korea's sunshine policy of engagement that a decade ago tried to build trust with the Communist North by providing unconditional aid and support programs. Brian Patton, VOA News, Seoul.
Indonesia and Malaysia have agreed to provide temporary refuge for the thousands of migrants and human trafficking victims stranded at sea. The breakthrough was announced Wednesday after a meeting between the foreign ministers of Malaysia, Indonesia, and Thailand. Joe Lowry is with the International Organization for Migration.
This is extremely good news coming out of Malaysia. It means that, you know, people will be able to get to shore that we've been asking for so many days. We've been trying to encourage the governments to let people disembark safely and to give them the medical life-saving aid that they need. So now when they land, we know that we'll be able to treat them on shore.
Five of the world's largest banks face around $5.7 billion in penalties for illegally colluding to manipulate prices and currency exchange. Wednesday, officials at the U.S. Department of Justice said currency traders at these banks worked as collaborators rather than competitors. I'm Frances Alonso in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehiz Wuhib, and coming up at this hour on Africa News Tonight.
Burundi's president, Pierre Nkurunziza, has agreed to delay parliamentary and local elections until June 5th, following protests and a coup attempt.
That's Hilary Hewler reporting from VOA's East Africa Bureau in Nairobi. Details next.
Also, the only international observers during Ethiopia's elections on Sunday will be from the African Union. And a joint force of French and Nigerian troops captured tons of drugs and weapons during a firefight with Islamist rebels in the Sahel.
We'll have these stories, plus the sunny side of sports with Sunny Young, music from Ghana, and our daily features. So stay with us. There's lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
Burundi's president, Pierre Nkurunziza, has agreed to delay parliamentary and local elections until June 5th, following protest and a coup attempt. Hilary Hewler has more from our East Africa Bureau in Nairobi.
The elections were originally scheduled for May 26th, but with Burundi still in a state of political crisis, they've now been postponed until the following week. Presidential spokesman Willy Nyamitwe says that the delay is at least partly a response to both domestic and international pressure.
Politicians from the opposition have asked the government to delay elections. And the second reason is that head of states from the region and the UN, the AU, and EU have urged the government to delay a little elections. And the third reason is that the president got a proposal from the electoral committee.
Nyamitwe says there's been no decision on whether or not to delay presidential elections scheduled to be held June 26th. Burundi has been racked by violence and unrest since late April, when President Pierre Nkurunziza decided to run for a third term. Thousands of protesters took to the streets, saying the move violates a two-term limit in the Constitution. But the president's supporters say that since he was elected by parliament, not voters, during his first term, he should be allowed to run again. Mr. Nkurunziza survived a coup attempt last week, but the violence has continued. On Tuesday, police fired tear gas and beat protesters, who vowed to keep protesting until the president steps down. Human rights groups say that at least 20 people have died in the unrest so far. While attending a session of the Pan-African Parliament in South Africa this week, Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta told a local television station that regional leaders want the presidential elections postponed.
We first and foremost said that it was necessary, given what was going on, that the elections be postponed, but within the constitutionally allowed mandate of the current government, in order to give us time for us to be able to work together with all parties to see how we can get to a situation where we get an amicable solution.
Meanwhile, more than 100,000 Burundians have fled to neighboring countries. In Tanzania, the World Health Organization has warned of a cholera outbreak among refugees and a lack of clean drinking water. Leaders from the East African community are due to meet next week to review the situation in Burundi. Hilary Hewler for VOA News, Nairobi.
Well, over 100,000 Burundian refugees have gone to Tanzania, Rwanda, and the DRC to escape political violence. In Tanzania, tens of thousands of refugees have gathered at the northern fishing village of Kagunga. Two boats have been hired to transport them to the town of Kigoma, about 3 hours away. The boats can transport about 2,000 refugees a day. In Kigoma, the refugees await transport to a refugee camp. Julius Marawa is the regional coordinator for Catholic Relief Services, which is providing food and sanitation for the refugees. From Kigoma, Tanzania, he spoke to VOA's Jody Kapua about the humanitarian operations.
UN agencies and other implementing partners are coordinating efforts at least to reduce the number of refugees from Kagunga, where most of them were entering into Tanzania from Burundi. So they are trying to reduce the number from Kagunga to Kigoma town, and also some are being taken from Kigoma town to the main refugee camp, Nyarugusu camp, which is in Kasuru district. So far, Kigoma town where refugees are being brought to a transfer center. This is the Lake Tanganyika Stadium. As of yesterday evening, there were almost 4,800 refugees. But today morning, most of them have already been transported from the stadium to Nyarugusu camp. But also we are still waiting others now who are being transported from Kagunga to the stadium.
How far is the camp from Kigoma?
The camp is almost 160 kilometers from Kigoma town.
And they are being taken there by bus, is that correct?
Yes, yes. There are buses which transport them from the stadium to Nyarugusu camp.
What are the major humanitarian issues that you are facing in Kigoma?
So far, there was a major challenge on health issues. There is an outbreak of diarrhea, and it has been confirmed that there is an outbreak of cholera. The response is now coming out, but it was not coming out in previous days, especially on issues pertaining to medications. But now, at least there is a response. People are getting treated, but not to the level that we want to see.
Does your organization and other humanitarian agencies need any particular international assistance to aid you in your helping the refugees?
Definitely, yes, because there is a huge number of refugees, and you can see with the increasing number of refugees, any support for the needs is required from the international level. People need community services, people need healthcare services, everything. We have a lot actually can be provided by the international agencies to support the situation. People need food. Yes, we have adequate food, but still with this number, there must be an additional support for that.
Julius Marwa is the regional coordinator for Catholic Relief Services from Kigoma, Tanzania. He spoke to VOA's Jody Kapua.
The only international observers during Ethiopia's elections on Sunday will be from the African Union. Opposition parties already feel the AU observers are not demanding enough in their criticism of Ethiopia's election process, which is dominated by the ruling party. Marta van der Werf reports from Addis Ababa.
The African Union has sent observers to Ethiopia for national elections this Sunday, May 24. 9 long-term observers, LTOs, arrived in April, and another 50 short-term observers arrived last week. Former Namibian President Hifikepunye Pohamba heads the mission. He commends Ethiopia for being stable and peaceful, even while located in a volatile region, but also mentioned points for review.
The National Electoral Board of Ethiopia is appointed by the Prime Minister and approved by the Parliament of Ethiopia. The AU LTOs noted that some interlocutors have expressed a concern in the manner of the appointment of the National Electoral Board of Ethiopia and urged that more political stakeholders be consulted in order for the process to be more transparent and inclusive.
The long-term observers also raised concerns about Ethiopia's anti-terrorism law and how it could be used to undermine freedom of expression and the media's right to protection of their sources and rights. Long-term observers of the African Union have so far visited 20 districts in 8 regions and will leave after the first week of June. But opposition parties are not impressed with the African Union observers. One of them is Blue Party spokesman Jonathan Tesfaye.
We don't think AU is an international observer. So it's just a legitimacy of dictatorship. It's just to cover, you have the U.S. who refused one way or another. And you have the EU, which somehow said it, like admitted that the previous observations hasn't done anything. It doesn't have a progress. So if there was a progress, well, it could be, you know, to enhance the whole process, there would be useful. But now it's all the same. In fact, it's going backwards.
Ethiopia's last elections in 2010 were observed by a European Union mission. The ruling party EPRDF won those elections in a landslide, taking all but one seat in parliament. According to a recent European Union statement, the EU decided to sit out this year's elections because its previous recommendations to Ethiopia were not accepted. Government spokesman Redwan Hussein says there was a difference of opinion between the Ethiopian government and the final recommendations of the EU mission.
Whatever prescription they made, it had nothing to do with election. It has to do with the entire democratic system and legal system and policy issues. So we didn't subscribe to that subscription because it has nothing to do with election.
Nearly 37 million Ethiopians are registered for the Sunday elections. More than 5,800 candidates from 58 political parties are running for parliament and regional offices. Less than 1,300 of the candidates are female, a situation the African Union attributes to a lack of resources and a lack of encouragement in Ethiopia's culture. Marta van der Wolf for VOA News, Addis Ababa.
Italian authorities say they have arrested a suspect in the March 18th bombing of a museum in Tunis, Tunisia. The man had been expelled by Sicilian immigration a month before the attack. Police say they arrested Tuil Abdelmajid yesterday evening in Gaggiano near Milan on a Tunisia arrest warrant. An anti-terrorism investigator said Abdelmajid was expelled from Sicily when he attempted to immigrate to Europe on February the 17th. Tunisian authorities arrested several suspects shortly after the bombing. They said they had killed the leader during the attack on the Bardo Museum, an assault that killed 22 tourists. The arrest sparked renewed criticism of the Italian Navy's year-long effort to rescue thousands of migrants from Mediterranean waters. The Global Initiative Against Transnational Organized Crime says the EU plan to capture and destroy vessels on the Mediterranean will have no long-term effect. They say that's because inflatable boats can easily be replaced, smugglers often let migrants pilot the craft, and larger vessels will be hard to identify among heavy commercial traffic. The EU has invited an envoy from the Tobruk-based government of the country to discuss EU plans to patrol Libyan waters. Libya has complained about not being included in the EU talks. Libyan special envoy Nouri Bet Almal is meeting this week with EU officials.
European Union countries are locked in an increasingly bitter battle over proposals to set quotas for accepting asylum seekers and other migrants fleeing Africa and the Middle East. What has become a European solidarity in handling the Mediterranean migrant crisis? Lisa Bryant reports from Paris.
After agreeing on tough new measures this week to fight illegal migration at sea, the 28-member European Union is not very unified on welcoming asylum seekers at home. Prime Minister Matteo Renzi of Italy, which is struggling to cope with a surge of migrants crossing the Mediterranean, has accused other European countries of trying to ignore the crisis. Germany has questioned European solidarity, as has the European Commission's first vice president, Hans Timmermans, who spoke Wednesday at the European Parliament in Strasbourg, France.
But in our view, it is not acceptable for people to say, yes, we want you to stop people from drowning, but at the same time, stay silent on where these people should go once they have been rescued.
The European Commission has proposed setting quotas for member states to accept refugee seekers, so countries like Italy, Greece, and Malta, which are on the front lines of the Mediterranean migration crisis, don't have to shoulder all the burden. The quota proposal is part of a larger plan to handle the thousands of migrants trying to cross the Mediterranean, with many dying in the process. EU countries agreed Monday on a naval mission to crack down on migrant smugglers, but they are split on quotas. Britain and Spain have rejected the proposal.
Il n'est pas question qu'il y ait des quotas d'immigrants.
So has France, after first appearing to accept it. French President François Hollande said this week that national immigration rules must be observed, and asylum seekers do not need quotas.
Tisztelt Hölgyeim és Uraim, meggyőződésem, hogy az, amit most javaslatként ismerünk.
Hungarian Prime Minister Viktor Orbán has gone further, denouncing the quota idea as bordering on insanity. Analysts say there are plenty of reasons for the resistance, including high unemployment and surging anti-immigrant sentiment in Europe. Critics also fault EU members for failing to address the root causes of the Mediterranean migration that they are fighting against. Lisa Bryant for VOA News, Paris. You're listening to Africa News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
Amihis Wuhib, 21 past the hour. Here's a recap of our top stories. Burundi's President Pierre Nkurunziza has agreed to delay parliamentary and local elections until June 5th following protests and a coup attempt. The only international observers during Ethiopia's elections on Sunday will be from the African Union. And a joint force of French and Nigerian troops captured tons of drugs and weapons during a firefight with Islamist rebels in the Sahel. And would like to hear your thoughts on our stories. You can write to us at Africa News Tonight, Voice of America, 330 Independence Avenue, Southwest Washington, D.C., 20237.
French military authorities in Niger say a joint force of French and Nigerian troops captured 1.5 tons of drugs and weapons during a firefight with Islamist rebels in the Sahel. Operation Barkhane forces fired on a convoy of pickup trucks that refused to stop for a checkpoint inspection on May 14th. French soldiers discovered the drugs and weapons in several white trucks after defeating the militants. Drug running is a major source of revenue for jihadist movements, and Niger's northeastern desert is an important transit zone for illegal trafficking from the Sahel to Libya. Operation Barkhane began in 2014 when 3,000 French troops joined with troops from Burkina Faso, Chad, Mali, Mauritania, and Niger to combat emerging jihadist forces.
And UN aid agencies report the humanitarian impact of the nearly two-month Saudi-led bombing campaign in Yemen and a blockade of fuel and other imported relief supplies is enormous. The agencies are appealing to the warring factions to agree to another ceasefire so essential aid can be delivered to the population. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
UN aid agencies are taking stock of the situation in Yemen following a recent five-day humanitarian pause to allow for the delivery of life-saving assistance. They say they are extremely troubled by what they see. They say the few days in which the guns fell more or less silent has allowed them to view the extent of suffering being endured by hundreds of thousands of citizens displaced by the conflict. The UN Refugee Agency has revised its displacement figure up upwards from 300,000 2 weeks ago to more than 545,000 now. The death toll also has gone up over the past 2 months of escalating fighting. Latest United Nations figures put the number killed at 1,849 and the number wounded at nearly 7,400. UNHCR spokesman Adrian Edwards says the temporary ceasefire agreed to by the Saudi Arabian coalition and Houthi rebels has allowed aid workers to access areas that had previously been off limits.
What we found were traumatized populations, people afraid, upset, and struggling to meet their basic needs. In the Amand al-Asimeh area of Sana'a, we interviewed displaced people staying with host families where several households were crowding under a single roof with inadequate bathrooms and water supply. Fuel shortages make it difficult to pump water.
Many people were economically vulnerable before the crisis. Now, Edward says, they are even worse off. He says most have lost their livelihoods and are entirely dependent on aid. He tells VOA the severe shortage of fuel in the country due to import restrictions on commercial and humanitarian aid continues to be a critical issue. He says the lack of fuel is compounding many existing difficulties.
It's pushing up prices. It's making it difficult for people to get about. The amount of fuel we were able to bring in is really only a drop in the ocean of needs, approximately 10% of the amount of fuel needed in the space of a month. So you can see there's significant need to get more in.
The UN Refugee Agency reports the humanitarian pause made it possible to fly in more aid and transport supplies to distribution hubs in the capital Sana'a and Aden. It says in-country stocks of relief items now are 3 times higher than they were before the pause. However, it notes checkpoints, insecurity, and high transport prices make it difficult to move about and distribute aid to the people in need. The World Food Programme says it too is experiencing similar difficulties. WFP says it had planned to provide food to nearly 750,000 people during the humanitarian pause, but it was only able to reach 400,000. It says it needs more time and more security to help those in need. The agency is appealing for what it calls a series of predictable breaks in the fighting to be able to deliver food to the hungry. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
This is Africa News Tonight with Kim Lewis. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. It's 27 minutes past the hour on The Voice of America.
Next time on Straight Talk Africa. For over 50 years, the Voice of America has been broadcasting to Africa in English. Today, VOA is a dynamic international multimedia broadcaster serving an estimated weekly global audience of 171 million people, with Africa as its largest audience. So, join us Wednesday at 18:30 UTC as we look ahead at VOA's plans for the future on VOA Africa.
Hello, I'm Douglas Simpoga. Join me for Reporters Roundtable every Thursday at 17:30 UTC. We'll take an in-depth look at an African news topic important to you. We'll have African journalists and expert guests share the ideas on the topic at hand. So, please plan to be with us every Thursday at 17:30 UTC, right here on The Voice of America.
What's happening, Africa? This is Jackson Bungani in Washington, D.C.
And I'm Nadia Sami in Johannesburg, South Africa. Thank you for joining us on Upfront each Wednesday, 17:30 UTC, for a lively discussion on issues that are topical, challenging, and always engaging.
The show tries to capture that fundamentally aspirational nature of today's African youth. As you've noticed, right here on the show, we talk about everything. Nothing is off the table.
I am a social networker, often online. For me, it's all about making connections, meeting people.
Ooh, without my family, I don't think I would have been here today because they gave me a lot of support morally.
Can't AU, African Union, can't these people really solve this nonsense of rigging election, brutality during what election violence, all this whatever?
Employment rates are climbing, so definitely there's less jobs in the market now.
Remember to connect with us on Facebook and on Twitter at Upfront Africa.
This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America. Here's a brief recap of our top stories this hour. Burundi's President Pierre Nkurunziza agrees to delay parliamentary and local elections until June 5th following protest and a coup attempt. The only international observers during Ethiopia's elections on Sunday will be from the AU. And a joint force of French and Nigerian troops captures tons of drugs and weapons during a firefight with Islamist rebels in the Sahel. Coming up, we'll have music from Ghana, and in our feature segment, human rights activists accuse South Africa's security forces of promoting xenophobic attacks in the country. I'm Kim Lewis with the Hayes Fuhib, and we're live from Washington. This is Africa News Tonight on the VOA. Sports with Sunny is next. Of course, it's time now for the sunny side of sports with Sunny Young, and happy hump day, Sunny.
Happy hump day. Happy Wednesday, Kim.
Yes. And I understand you are kicking off today with Senegalese football player.
Yay. Kudos for that Senegalese player, Kim. Joining us once again on the sunny side of sports is David Legg, our African football guru. Good evening, David.
Thank you, Sunny.
David, let's give a sunny side of sports salute to Sadio Mane. He puts his name in the English Premier League record books for Southampton. I guess you can say he blessed the Saints of Southampton with a record performance. Tell our VOA football fans about that, David.
You know, Sonny, when you want to create history, it normally takes a little bit of time, maybe days, weeks, months, even years. But Sadio Mane did it in 176 seconds.
Mm.
I repeat, 176 seconds. And in that time, Sonny, he scored a hat-trick for Southampton in the 6-1 drubbing of Aston Villa. And that was the fastest hat-trick in English Premier League history, well ahead of the Robbie Fowler hat-trick for Liverpool 21 years ago. That took 4 minutes and 32 seconds. I said 176 seconds. Translated, that is, 2 minutes and 56 seconds. So congratulations to Sadio Mane for an absolutely fantastic performance. And not surprisingly, Sonny, probably the understated quote of the week, he said it was his best moment in football. He added that in Senegal, they will be very happy for me. I have many fans there. Well, I got news for Sadio Mane. I'm sure he's listening to the show, but just in case, Sonny, he's gone to make some tea, as they do quite often in England. The news is that not only has he got a lot of fans in Senegal now, I think he's got a lot of fans in many other countries in Africa. You know, the English Premier League, it is arguably the top league in the world. It's certainly the most media-hyped league. And to have that record of the fastest hat-trick is a fantastic achievement, not just for Mane, but for Senegal, and most importantly of all, for African football. But, Sonny, believe it or not, it is not the fastest hat-trick ever. A guy by the name of Tommy Ross, playing for Ross County in Scotland, way back in 1964, when I think I was in nappies at the time, he took just 90 seconds, can you believe it? 1 minute and 30 seconds to score a hat-trick. Now, if you think of the time, Sonny, it takes for the goalkeeper to get the ball out of the net, back to the halfway line for the kickoff, etc., 90 seconds is just about unbelievable. But that's what he did, a man by the name of Tommy Ross. And please, Sunny Side of Sport listeners, remember that, because I'll probably use that as a quiz question one of these days. Another very fast one, Sonny, Eduardo Maglione in Argentina. He scored a hat-trick for Independiente in 1 minute and 50 seconds. A person by the name of Jimmy O'Connor in 1967 in my native Republic of Ireland. He scored a hat-trick in 2 minutes and 13 seconds. And James Hayter, 2 minutes and 20 seconds was all he took to score a hat-trick for Bournemouth. And that's relatively recently, in 2004. But if you think of the competitiveness of the English Premier League, Mane's achievement, Sonny, was quite remarkable. And he, of course, is in only his first season with the Saints, as you rightly said, the nickname of Southampton. He joined the Saints from Salzburg in Austria, and he's fast making a name for himself. And he did, of course, play for Senegal in the recent Africa Cup of Nations. Didn't make a huge impression. Senegal, rather disappointing, going out in the first round. But there's no doubt that come the 2017 Africa Cup of Nations qualifiers, when Senegal run onto the field, one person that defenders are going to be watching very carefully indeed is the 23-year-old Sadio Mane. Yes, indeed. Well done, Sadio.
Yes, indeed, David. Big achievement for Sadio Mane. Were any other Africans on target in Europe?
Yes, indeed, Sonny, including a couple of Ivorians in the English Premier League, Yaya Toure. And there's a lot of speculation about him possibly leaving Manchester City during the close season. Inter Milan are one of the clubs mentioned as a possible destination. He scored a brace for Manchester City in an impressive 4-2 away victory over Swansea. And another one of the goals came, ironically, from Wilfred Bonny. Wilfred Bonny, until midway through this season, played for Swansea and now scoring against his former club. If we turn to Spain, a name that keeps cropping up now on the Voice of America is Youssef El Arabi of Granada, the Moroccan scoring another goal for his side in a 3-0 win over Real Sociedad. We had an all-African affair for Almeria. Burkina Faso, Jonathan Songo, setting up the goal for TV Bafuma, who played very well indeed for Congo Brazzaville in the recent Africa Cup of Nations. But unfortunately, it was not enough. Sevilla beating their club by 2-1. Another player who's scoring consistently in Europe is Max Alain Gradel, one of the Ivorians in their 2015 Cup of Nations winning squad. He scored a brace for Saint-Étienne, and he's now scored 15 league goals this season, 11 of them since winning the Africa Cup of Nations with Ivory Coast in February. So, you know, coaches sometimes, Sonny, they moan and groan about players coming back from the Cup of Nations tired and not performing very well. Well, that myth, I believe, has been put firmly to rest by Max-Alain Gradel of Saint-Étienne. Andre Ayew, a great weekend for him. He scored a goal as Marseille won 4-0 at Lille. And then to cap his great weekend, he was voted the best African footballer in League One. That's the top flight French division. So congratulations to him. Andre Ayew, of course, one of the sons of the legendary Bede Pele, that Ghana star of years gone by. And no Sunnyside, a sports show featuring the goal scorers in Europe, would be complete without Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang. He's the Gabon star who plays for Borussia Dortmund in the German Bundesliga. And yes, you've guessed it, Sonny, he scored yet again. He has now scored 22 goals in all competitions in Germany. Now, remember that name, Aubameyang. He was the runner-up to Yaya Toure in the most recent African Footballer of the Year vote. And my guess, Sonny, is it's not going to be too long before he swaps runners-up position for the top place in Africa. An amazing achievement. I mean, the German league, one of the best in Europe, 22 goals. Well done, Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang.
David, you mentioned Andre Ayew, another member of the Black Stars of Ghana, John Mensah, a defender. Some not-so-positive news. How about an update?
Yeah, Sonny, this is one of the bizarre stories of the week on the Sunnyside of Sport. Jonathan Mensah, in 2011, was playing for the Italian club Udinese, and he told the French club Evian that he was a free agent, when in fact he was still under contract to the Italian club. Now, what I don't understand, Sonny, is if I, as a member of that French club, was about to sign a player, surely you would check his details with the Italian club. One doesn't want to doubt the player, but nevertheless, in terms of all the contracts, etc., etc., you would want to establish exactly where you stood. Well, what happened is everyone believed Mensah, who in fact was not a free agent. They signed him, and FIFA stepped in and slapped him with a four-month ban. And this is important, from club football, not from international football. The player appealed to the Court of Arbitration for Sport. It's sort of the independent body of last resort, if you believe you've got a justifiable case. They're based in Switzerland. But they rejected Mensah's plea. He has already served 1 month of the ban, and when the new season commences, whether he's playing in France or somewhere else, he will have to serve a further 3 months. However, he is eligible to play for Ghana, so he can appear for the Black Stars against Mauritius in June in the opening matches of the 2017 Africa Cup of Nations. But a really tardy affair, Sonny, and one that doesn't shine a good light on African football. And hopefully, Mr. Jonathan Mensah has learned a very valuable lesson in life. Tell the truth, it's much simpler that way.
David, let's keep our focus on Europe and the English Premier League table. I know the season is winding down there. How about an update?
It's probably just as well that Chelsea have clinched the title, because they got a 3-0 hammering from West Bromwich Albion in their latest match. The Burundi-born Berahino scored two of those goals for West Brom, but unfortunately the bad news for Burundi is the player has already declared for England, for whom he's also eligible, so he will not be seen in the colours of the Burundi Swallows. Liverpool, a sad finale at Anfield for Steven Gerrard, his final game, but unfortunately Crystal Palace were party poopers. They went there and they won by 3-1. In a key relegation clash, Sunderland and Leicester, 0-0 draw, and that means that Leicester stay up. Now, normally, Sonny, the club are at bottom at the mid-season point, which is Christmas in England. They're doomed to go down. In fact, only one club in the past has not been relegated, and Leicester now become the second club. They were bottom at Christmas, but recently they've had a superb run, 6 wins and 1 draw out of 8 games, so only defeat, in fact, against champions Chelsea. So well done to Leicester City, a club known as the Foxes. If we look at the table, Sonny, at the top, Chelsea with 84 points, Manchester City, 76 points, Arsenal, 71, and Manchester United, 69, both assured of top 4 places. And in their game at Old Trafford at the weekend, Manchester United taking the lead, but Arsenal equalising through an own goal, that match finishing 1-1. Interesting at the bottom, Hull City at the moment, third from bottom, Burnley and Queen's Park Rangers already relegated. The scenario, Sonny, is that if Hull do not win their final game at home to Manchester United, they will be relegated. But if they do beat the Red Devils, two other clubs could go down instead, and they are Sunderland and Newcastle United. The bizarre slide of Newcastle United continuing at the weekend when they lost 2-1 at Queen's Park Rangers. And their final game is at home to West Ham. Hull, as mentioned, is home to Manchester United. Sunderland with 2 difficult away games. They play Arsenal and then they play Chelsea, so no guarantees of any further points there.
Thanks, David. That's our football guru, David Legg, speaking with us once again from Johannesburg. Finally, the Golden State Warriors beat the visiting Houston Rockets 110-106 in Game 1 of the National Basketball Association's Western Conference Finals. I'm VOA Sonny Young, and that's the sunny side of sports. Back to Yahaeus Wuhib and Kim Lewis.
Thank you, Sonny. And listen to the sunny side of sports Monday through Friday at 1631 UTC and 1831 UTC. And on Fridays, Sonny has an expanded half-hour edition of the sunny side of sports at 1730 hours UTC, right here on the Voice of America.
Coming up, human rights activists accuse South Africa's security forces of promoting xenophobia attacks inside the country. And next, trying to stem the migration of Africans to Europe by boat. But first, some music. Here is Muguyaro of Ghana with Less You Know.
Yeah. Respect the swagger.
Less You Know.
DXD.
Meth Mix.
Just the flow, we now we blow.
Now we
know they work too hard to make them show.
Yeah, yeah.
The swagger's a Mugunyaro, Mugunyaro. The mother boy, them Zingaro. We know they see you serve because the swagger just the flow, we
now we blow.
We know they work too hard to make them show.
Yeah, yeah.
The swagger's a Shagen Yaro, Shagen Yaro.
The mother boy them zingaro. Salute the swag, salute the swag. We don't unite, we don't unite, we don't unite. We just stay on top, we just stay on top. We know the drop, we know the flop. We know the flop, we know the flop. We just talk the talk, yeah, we talk the talk. We just walk the walk.
Watch my three piece of his swagger. We my sexy girl Lady Gaga. We see P, don't P, me the manga. Just one stick up, give me cassava. Hey, listen up to this saga. From Yankee to Tokyo, even to Praga. You can't do me foco, I be the raga. Muffin, see the way nigga the shada. Russian, caution, I can't go for instructions. How can the mic kill go for reductions? How can the mic be cold when I'm busting? How can I gotta be slow when he hustling? With DXD and a Porsche. People like we doing our abortion. With two enemies contraction. So feel the action with DXT and a portion. People like we doing our abortion with two enemies concoction. So feel the action.
The swagger just the flowy, now we blow.
Now we blow.
We know they work too hard to make them show.
Yeah, yeah.
The swagger some mugunyaro. Mugunyaro. The mother boy them zingaro. We know they see you sad because the swagger just the flowy,
now we blow.
We know they work too hard to make them show.
Yeah, yeah.
The swagger's a shaking yaddo. Shaking yaddo. The mother boy, them zingaro. Salute the swag, salute the swag. Tachigidanka, Munzo ya uba bunaka. When I swag the straight presidential. You the talk the talk, and we the walk the talk. And I the act say, what's in me the matter? The you know, say we be the master. The fact say, you the take the lead. Know the mean, you go run so faster. We are here now, the whole world to see we. The small one you see on TV. Make you just a Shiva, make you just a Shiva. Like you catch some fever. Now you the quack body. Funny boy, them just the quack body. Bad mountain, we no fear nobody. Jump on the floor and break your body. Hey, man a champion. Swagger's a shaking yaro. Jimmy, when I'm zingaro. If you don't know, now you know we motto. Hey, man a champion. Swagger's a mugun yaro. Jimmy, when I'm zingaro. If you don't know, now you know we motto.
China, yeah, share promise signs for designer. My chick day long, don't lady Dina. Who better shape swash with Jemima? Hey, Ruby, so me Hana. You know, be movie, Kobe Rana. Go say, yeah, easy, yo, we're Ghana. Hey, Miss Lang is me with grandma. Okay, my daughter, I don't like you talking. Shocker, why don't I keep sucking? Sucker, why don't I keep trotting? Stalker, yo, why don't I keep walking? With DXD and a portion, even like we do in our abortion. With two enemies, concoction. So feel the action, DXD and a portion. Even like we doing our abortion. Two enemies concoction. So feel the action.
The swagger just the flowy,
now we blow.
We know they work too hard to make them show.
Yeah, yeah.
The swagger's a mugunyaro. Mugunyaro. The mother boy them zingaro. We know they see you sad because the swagger just the flowy,
now we blow.
We know they work too hard to make them show.
Yeah, yeah.
The swagger's a shaking yaddo. Shaking yaddo. The mother boy them zingaro. Salute the swag, salute the swag.
Yeah. Salute the swag. Ayo, Meth Mix. The mother boy zingaro. La. Come on.
Muguyaro of Ghana with Less You Know.
Well, human rights activists say South Africa's security forces are promoting xenophobic attacks and legitimizing hatred with their recent roundup and arrest of foreign nationals in Johannesburg and Durban. Many of those detained, they say, have been denied access to lawyers and basic amenities. VOA's Anita Powell has more from Johannesburg.
From Johannesburg's scarred heart, a song of hope and peace. Xenophobic violence has swept the Rainbow Nation, provoking protests and clashes in the cities of Durban and Johannesburg. Hundreds of foreign nationals, most from African nations like Congo, Ethiopia, Malawi, Nigeria, Somalia, and Zimbabwe, have been displaced. Police have arrested hundreds of people, and President Jacob Zuma has appealed to his nation for peace. But on the gritty streets of the diverse Johannesburg neighborhood of Yeovil, life is a struggle for many African immigrants. Adebawale Johnson came from Nigeria a year ago and has been selling shoes on this street corner. He says he experiences discrimination daily.
They use the word, go back to your country. What are you doing here?
If your country is good enough, why come in here? So I really don't understand the language. You know, it pains my heart that my fellow black people, you know, treating me that way.
Many, like these Congolese nationals who fled what they say is increasing repression under President Joseph Kabila, say they have nowhere else to go. They say they are disgusted with their adopted home.
I'm leaving my country, Kabila looking, they killing me. I'm leaving my country, I'm coming here. Now, some are looking, they killing me.
We finish on this thing. If it's a soccer, things come here. Congo can't play with South Africa. We don't want this relationship because it's useless and nothing.
Religious leaders say prayer won't be enough to fix the issues driving the hateful attacks.
To us, I think it's a hatred because of social economic of unemployment that is going on in South Africa.
Jacob Mamabolo, an African National Congress official in the Johannesburg area, says his government is working to right wrongs, but they have a big job ahead of them.
To have reversed completely the legacy of colonialism that dates back to more than 300 years. And I think I'm convinced that the spread of xenophobia that we have seen, it's an isolated cases.
He's not the only one who is hopeful. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
The European Union Commission is debating whether EU member countries accept a certain number of refugees under a quota program. The move is aimed to stem the current migration crisis that has seen more than 1,800 migrants die already while trying to cross from Africa to Europe by boat. Kathleen Newland, co-founder of the Migration Policy Institute, tells Ricky Shryock why the proposal could be controversial to some EU member states.
It's not going to address the causes of the crisis, but it is a way to address the short-term humanitarian considerations, which really have to be paramount, that is, saving lives in the Mediterranean and coming to a humane resolution for people who are picked up at sea. We still don't know many of the details of the plan, nor do we know how the negotiations will proceed after proposals are made by the Commission. The member states of the European Union are deeply divided about the proposal to have a, what they call a distribution key, that is a formula for distributing refugees and asylum seekers.
And do you know if this proposal, does it mean a certain amount of the migrants who are being found in these boats, or does it mean a certain amount of refugees in total?
This proposal is to deal with people arriving across the Mediterranean. Now, the formula for the distribution key may take in things like how many refugees or asylum seekers from other modes of entry a country is experiencing. That may be one of the things that's taken into account, along with the size of the country, the population, GDP, the level of unemployment. You know, there are a whole range of factors that could be included in any formula, and I'm sure that will be one of the points of negotiation among the EU member states.
Have there been discussions among the EU member states as well about the process of legally migrating to these countries?
It is very difficult. And the EU member states have, you know, a certain set of criteria that for immigration. And they are mainly, they mainly have to do with family unification and skills that are needed in the labor market.
What about outside of refugees, economic migrants?
The opportunities for job seekers, unless they are highly skilled, is very, very limited in Europe. Many of the European countries still have extremely high unemployment rates, especially youth unemployment, as a sort of hangover from the Great Recession. Now, this is despite the sort of long-term picture in which it's very clear aging population, European countries are going to need migrants, but they haven't yet really figured out how to fill those labor market needs in an orderly way. So you do have the continued lure of jobs which are available. This is something that is being discussed in the EU and in the UN, is how to establish more legal channels for people to migrate so that they don't have to take to these extremely dangerous and expensive journeys.
Kathleen Newland is co-founder of the Migration Policy Institute. She was speaking to Ricky Shryock from Washington, D.C. This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz. Tune in to Africa News Tonight at 16 and 18 hours UTC, Monday through Friday. And with that, we wrap up this edition of Africa News Tonight. Up next, our VOA editorial. I'm Yais Ruhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at www.voaafrica.com. And on behalf of our Africa News Tonight producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Nelson Lopes, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
According to the United Nations Office of the High Commissioner for Refugees, or UNHCR, last year over 51 million people were living as refugees from war or persecution. In the past decade, most refugees came from Asia and the Pacific. But today, the Middle East and North Africa are the main regions of origin of refugees. For the first time, there are more displaced people than after the Second World War. That's partly because there are more new conflicts, but the old ones are not going away, and instead are becoming chronic, said Catherine Wiesner, Deputy Assistant Secretary for Population, Refugees, and Migration. And they've become more brutal. Civilians aren't just getting caught in the crossfire, they are being deliberately and indiscriminately killed as warring parties lay siege to neighborhoods, burn villages, and even target hospitals and schools, said Deputy Secretary Wiesner. International humanitarian principles are being trampled. Boundaries once honored, even in wartime, have been crossed. The U.S. State Department's Bureau of Population, Refugees, and Migration is tasked with providing protection, easing suffering, and resolving the plight of persecuted and uprooted people around the world. Wherever uprooted people flee, we and other agencies strive to adapt, to identify the greatest threats and needs, and devise new ways to protect the most vulnerable refugees, said Deputy Assistant Secretary Wiesner. This includes programs to protect them from perils commonly faced by refugees and displaced people, including gender-based violence, human trafficking, and exploitation by criminals who prey on the vulnerable. The United States funds schools and recreation centers for children, as well as vocational training for youth and adults, so that whether they eventually return home or settle in a foreign country, they will have the skills to get well-paying jobs or start new businesses of their own. The best solution to mass displacement isn't local integration or resettlement, said Deputy Assistant Secretary Wiesner. It is not more humanitarian aid. It is addressing the root causes of the violence that drives so many people from their homes. The United States and its partners are committed to helping resolve conflicts, build democratic and just societies. Until then, we are working to safeguard refugees' lives and their dignity.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
What's happening, Africa? This is Jackson Bungani in Washington, D.C.
And I'm Nadia Sami in Johannesburg, South Africa. Thank you for joining us on Upfront each Wednesday, 17:30 UTC, for a lively discussion on issues that are topical, challenging, and always engaging.
The show tries to capture that fundamentally aspirational nature of today's African youth. As you've noticed, right here on the show, we talk about everything. Nothing is off the table.
I am a social networker, often online. For me, it's all about making connections, meeting people.
Ooh, without my family, I don't think I would have been here today because they gave me a lot of support morally.
Can't AU, African Union, can these people really solve this nonsense of rigging election, brutality during what election violence, all this whatever?
Employment rates are climbing, so definitely there's less jobs in the market now.
Remember to connect with us on Facebook and on Twitter at Upfront Africa.
Next time on Straight Talk Africa. For over 50 years, the Voice of America has been broadcasting to Africa in English. Today, VOA is a dynamic international multimedia broadcaster serving an estimated weekly global audience of 171 million people, with Africa as its largest audience. So, join us Wednesday at 18:30 UTC as we look ahead at VOA's plans for the future.